You've got the drive to create things. You're a writer, a photographer, a musician, a maker. You're ready to make things happen.
But chasing creative isn't always easy. Your time and energy go to your work, your family, and your life. Is it really possible to make space for the creative in your everyday?
Here at the Chasing Creative Podcast, we believe you can. We're talking to everyday creatives who have insights and action steps you can take today to make your creative plans happen.
I'm Ashley Brooks, a freelance writer and editor at Brooks Editorial and work-at-home mom who would love to devote more time to creative writing and journaling.
And I'm Abigail Krebs, the writer and photographer behind Inkwells and Images. I'm living my creative life nights and weekends after I get home from my full-time job at an ad agency.
And you're listening to the Chasing Creative Podcast.
Jenny Bravo is a writer and blogger who is as passionate about coffee as she is about breathing. She's published 3 contemporary romance books in the last year and is the founder of Blots and Plots, a motivational website for writers and readers. Jenny is a big supporter of indie authors and of people in general, and that is one of the reasons why we love her and wanted to have her on the podcast here today. So, Jenny, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, both Abby and Ashley, and thank you for reading that bio with a straight face.
Was I not supposed to? Is it supposed to be funnier?
No, you did a great job. You did a great job. After I sent it to you, I was like, oh my gosh, I am so ridiculous.
But that You're was not, awesome. Though. There is no shame in being passionate about coffee.
Right? No.
We will not judge you.
Thank you.
A fun bio is way more like fun in general, just to kick off a podcast too, than Jenny graduated in 2001 from blah, 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 blah. And
yeah, let's be real. Nobody cares when anybody graduated.
No, exactly. It's way more fun. And, you know, it sets people up to get to know you right off the bat. It's just more fun that way.
Exactly. So now that we've got your fun bio out of the way, tell us a little bit more about where you're at now and how you got here. And you can include your graduation year in that if you would like to.
Absolutely. So, yes, I graduated with a degree in English creative writing in 2013 from Louisiana State University. So there you go. There's my like official bio. But yeah, I graduated and I knew I was like, I want to do really fun things right after college before I have to like enter the corporate world. So I went and I studied in Ireland. I did a creative writing program in Ireland for the summer. Then I went on to work for Disney for about 6 months, I'd say. And then I got serious about writing a novel. So it was really interesting. I wrote my novel. I started writing my novel the same day that I started working my first full, you know, big girl job, so to say.
That is crazy.
Yeah, I think I just, you know, those fluorescent lights kind of hit me and I was like, I'm going to have to find a way to get this creative outlet going. So, yeah, I started Blots and Plots late 2013 and it's been going ever since and just kind of growing and evolving and yeah. So now, you know, 3 books later and a pretty really fun, exciting community through Blots and Plots. And I'm really excited about the place that I'm at right now.
That is fantastic. And I have to interject and ask, what did you do at Disney?
This is probably one of my favorite questions. I was a safari driver at Animal Kingdom.
Yes.
So, yeah.
I am such a huge fan of Disney. This is like skyrocketed to the top of my list of like favorite people.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I'm so excited to be on that list. Oh, yeah. I was, it was so exciting. I did the college program. So, as long as you're still in college when you apply, you can do the program. So, I applied my last semester of college and I did the phone interview and they kind of asked me about, you know, what my interests are. And I was like, I've been in musical theater all in high school and college. So anything where I'm like interacting with people would be awesome. So the funny kind of part of that is my parents took my younger cousin to Disney that summer before I went, and they went on the safari ride and they were like, oh my gosh, Jenny, this is for you. We really want you to be the driver. And I said, well, my best friend was on it, like did the program, and she worked in parking, so I'm not going to get my hopes up. And then like the day that they tell you what your job is, I almost like passed out right there. They were like, you're going to be a, you know, you're working at the safari ride. And yeah, so I drove the truck. I gave the tours. I tried not to hit the animals with my truck. It was all good.
That sounds like a pretty good plan.
Yes, it is a good plan.
Is what a magical like start to your career as a, you know, an adult to work at Disney. I just think that's amazing. I want to go back and do that.
Yes, it's everything you would imagine and more. It just was the best experience.
You said that you first started writing your novel, or like getting serious about writing your novel, when you did get that first like grown-up job with the soul-sucking fluorescent lights that I think we're all too familiar with, unfortunately. So yes. That's when you started writing your book. But what was that first idea like when it came to you? Like, did the characters come to you first, or was it plot, or was it just one of those things where you were like, I'm just going to sit down and write and see what comes out?
You know, it's really, my story is very interesting with kind of my relationship to writing. I had first started trying to write a novel in college because I took a novel writing class, and I had this really great idea, which I hope that I get back to at some point. It was a story kind of about, it was a mixture of fantasy and dystopian, but more heavy on the fantasy side, but I just couldn't really get it working right. Like, I just couldn't figure out how to write it because there was so much to it with the world building. And I think it was a lot of pressure for a first novel. So I just, you know, I found myself getting stuck so many times. So when I first, you know, when I first sat down to, you know, write my first novel for real and get serious about it, I thought about this idea I'd had in high school. So that's where all of these characters and the actual idea came from. I'd already been thinking about this story in high school, but I just really wasn't equipped to tell it. I mean, I have, like, I can go back and I have, you know, pages and pages of the manuscript. And the story definitely evolved and changed, and the characters got a little bit, well, got way more developed, and the story got more intricate. But I did, I kind of had the idea in high school about, you know, this complicated couple and what it's like to actually have a real relationship and how to make it work once, you know, if things fall apart, and can you pick that back up again? And so I had this idea, and when I sat down and thought about, okay, if you want to write a novel, you really should be writing something that means a lot to you. And I went back to that idea. And once I decided that, it flowed from there. And I know that is not the story for most people. Like, a lot of people will struggle and have, you know, definitely there are always hardships in writing. But, you know, once I made that decision of writing something that I knew and that I was confident in, then it just, you know, I made a decision and I went from there.
Well, that sounds like an amazing experience to have. Like you said, writing can be a total struggle and something that is hard. I mean, it is physically a hard thing to do, to sit down and discipline yourself. But to have a novel kind of come to you like that and be just so fluid as you worked through it sounds like it was just an amazing first novel to really sit down and write.
It really was. And it's so interesting, like the way it happened, because I think writing is such an interesting experience and it's so unique for everybody, but no one teaches you exactly how to write a novel. Even if you, I mean, you can take all of the classes and you can take all of, you know, you can learn and study all the books and all of that, but you're not going to learn how to write a novel until you're actually writing through it. It's just a unique experience for everyone. And there's definitely help out there. And I for sure, you know, read books and, you know, again, took classes. But the best experience was actually sitting down and writing it. And one of the best places too that I found kind of help in was through Twitter of all places, and having friends on there that were writing also, and utilizing those like writing sprints, just going to Twitter and being like, does anyone want to do a writing sprint with me right now? And I would knock out 1,000 words in 30 minutes with a friend on Twitter, which was like the craziest idea. Like, no one teaches you that in college. Mm-hmm. But it was so, that really motivated me to get the writing done.
Yeah, it's crazy how much of a community of writers there is on Twitter. Like, I think that's why it's my favorite social media, is because when I first started out using Twitter, I was connecting with all these people who also love to write. And it was like, oh, there's all these people who are like writing and hanging out on Twitter and encouraging each other and like working through their problems and doing writing sprints. And I think a lot of people don't know that about Twitter. They think that it's just like kind of where people go to be snarky during the day. But that is really like the good side of that social media platform for sure.
Absolutely. And that's actually what I recommend when anyone asks me, oh, how do you create this author platform, or where do you get started in social media? My first thing is always go to Twitter, like go find somebody that is interesting to you and is doing cool things and just be like, hey, what's up? Like, I am that person that I have no shame in, you know, reaching out to someone on Twitter. When I get on Twitter, I'm very extroverted and I'm like, oh, that's so funny. Like, I'm just talking to everybody all the time. And that really is a way to kind of break into that community. And I've made like honest, real friends off Twitter that, you know, they helped me. I mean, my friend Marissa Fuller that I met on Twitter, she worked with me basically every step of the way in writing my novel, because she did so many writing sprints with me and would read samples. And it's just really this amazing place to, you know, find and connect with people. And that's why I always, and it's easy to do. It's not a complicated, you know, Instagram. I love Instagram, but it can be very daunting for people that aren't, you know, that can't really, you know, get into the picture thing or confused mm-hmm. about that. But Twitter is just very easy. It's 140 characters. You write it out, you send it off, and there you go.
Yeah, I like Twitter for all of those exact same reasons. It's this wonderful blend of encouragement and community. And, you know, for me, there's writers and photographers that I follow. And it's also where I get most of my news, because I refuse to pay for a newspaper, all those different kinds of things. And it's just this wonderful place to go when you have, you know, 5 minutes and you just need a quick pick me up and you can't go get coffee.
I love everything you just said, particularly the coffee part. Like today, yes. I just tweeted. Like I tweeted today, I was like, please, someone send me coffee. And then people will just send me like pictures of coffee, or they'll like just all of these great things. And I'm like, this is why I'm friends with you people. Thank you.
The problem is the pictures of coffee almost make it worse, because you're like, oh, now I can see it, but I don't have it.
That's an excellent point. An excellent point.
So Jenny, you work full time and you write and market your books on the side. How on earth do you structure your day or your week in order to have time for all of it? Because it can be really daunting to both write and market, let alone do it all in addition to a full time job.
Yes, that's an excellent question. And I'm still figuring that out every step of the way. Because when I first started writing, the blog wasn't as big of a deal. And people weren't really expecting very much from me. I kind of blogged where it was basically like, oh, here's, you know, random thoughts I'm thinking today. How, you know, do you feel, internet? And no one was really listening necessarily. But now it's kind of becoming its own sort of entity. I don't even know what to call it exactly, but it's getting bigger and people are, you know, checking the blog for resources, and I'm hosting workshops and, you know, very much more connected. So that's becoming pretty time consuming, in addition to, you know, writing my next book and trying to get that handled. And I have, you know, my editor's like, when do you think you're going to get that to me? And I'm like, what a good question. So it can be a lot. And I'm actually teaching an e-course right now called Busy Writer Bootcamp, where I'm talking exactly about finding these little pockets of time in your day to get things done. And I am not the organized person in any way. Like, I'm the person that buys the planner at the beginning of the year and I stop using it by February. So it's very, it's been kind of challenging for me to be like, okay, if you want to make all these things happen, you're going to have to actually find spaces in your day for them to happen. So for me, it's a lot about trying to do, you know, trying to find these small pieces of my day. So, for instance, like I use my lunch breaks really well at work. Either I'm like doing a writing sprint or I'm, you know, writing a quick email or something like that. And then once I get home, I'm very intentional about my time. I want to make sure I'm spending time with my family and like, you know, making time for me to like kind of rest and that sort of thing. But I also want to make sure that I can knock out the things that are important, that I'm answering emails, that I'm planning my next, you know, whatever adventure on the blog is and that kind of thing. So I think it's a lot about being intentional with your time, prioritizing, and just actually, you know, making time to do it. It's a lot of work, but it's, I find that if it's something that you really want to do, it's something you really care about, you'll find the time.
Yeah. And that's exactly what it is it's like, there are those little pockets of time in your day. And if you're really serious about doing your creative project, whether it's writing or whatever, you are going to be willing to sacrifice other things that aren't as important to you in order to fit those things in.
Exactly. And that's kind of one of the lessons that I was teaching in my boot camp. Like one of the first lessons I taught was kind of evaluating your time. And I had them do a time audit where you basically were tracking a full day of, okay, what does my daily day look like? Because a lot of the time I think we have the tendency to say like, I'm too busy or I don't have time for that. But it has a lot to do with our mindset too. So we have to factor that in. So if we can actually put that down on paper and look and see, okay, where do I have some time where I can, you know, shave off a little bit of extra, you know, pockets of time, as we're saying. So like, okay, rather than watching an hour and a half of TV tonight, I can watch, you know, just an hour and I can spend 30 minutes doing a writing sprint. And for me, that means 1,000 words. So that's a lot of, you know, that's a lot of time that I can make things happen in.
Yeah, I think that is so true. And it's hard to say no to things like television. And I think especially as, you know, writers and readers, we all love stories and we like to consume stories. And it's so hard to be like, no, I'm not going to, you know, participate with the rest of the world right now in this story that I really am invested in. I'm going to write my own or create my own. And I think this is a reason that I am like 2 full seasons behind in Downton Abbey still.
That's okay. It's, I don't know. I'm not crazy about Downton Abbey after like the first 2 or 3 seasons, but let's not get off track. I was just about to take that train like way where it didn't need to go. So, yeah, but I love that point though about how we are story people, and that's why we love TV so much, is because sometimes I think we feel so guilty about like, mm-hmm. Oh, I'm just sitting there vegging out watching Netflix. I'm not really doing anything useful. But the reason we get so sucked in is because we love the stories, which in mm-hmm. a way isn't all that different from getting sucked into a book. But when you're reading, you can feel all highfalutin about it and intellectual. And if you're watching Netflix, it's just like Netflix, you know? But, you know, it's a good point that we can't always be consuming stories if we ever want to create our own. We need to make time and space for both.
I love what you said about, I love this conversation because I am that person that wants to, like, consume all of the content. Like, I'm constantly listening to podcasts or I'm, you know, reading people's blogs. And I mean, for anything, like, that's why if I'm writing a book, I'm not going to be reading another contemporary romance book because I don't want that to filter into what I'm writing. And I know that is the case for a lot of people. They don't, you know, when they're writing a certain genre, they'll read something totally different. Mm-hmm. But there's also this, you know, tendency to kind of over consume content now. And I'm probably like, you know, number one offender of that. That's, you know, we're trying to shove all these ideas into our heads that we're almost like, it's exhausting that we need to just kind of step back and be like, okay, I'm not going to read this book right now, or I'm not going to listen to this podcast. I just need to sit here and let the ideas come to me, because if not, I'm going to be spitting out other people's ideas all the time.
Yeah, that overconsumption is something that I've struggled with a lot, because I got into this cycle where, especially with blogs, like I wanted to read everybody else's blogs and get all their tips for doing different mm-hmm. things on the internet, or like see what they were writing and see where they were submitting their writing and all this stuff. But I was never actually taking action on any of it or applying it to my own work. And I think that's where people really find that pitfall, is they forget to go and bring that back to their own creative project. So how do you have any tips for keeping yourself from overconsuming in your just everyday life?
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, I like how you said that about it filters in, like, you know, a lot of the time we're thinking, okay, well, I want to write a book, or I want to start a blog, or I want to do a podcast. So obviously it's natural for us to want to go and find all these resources on it. And the internet is this amazing place with like 1,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000, So I just kept going with that number, and I was like, it's just getting bigger. I'm doing it the wrong way. It's going backwards. But there are just so many resources out there, which is a good thing. But like you said, it can filter into our stuff, and then we're not actually doing anything. So for me, I think what works best is as far as for writing, if you're going to be writing in a certain genre, don't be reading in that same genre, just because I feel like you're going to have a tendency to have that filter into what you're writing. And then just allow for a little bit of quiet time in your day. I know that's like really hard to find, but for me, like I have an hour commute each way to go to work. So for me, like I have a tendency to be like, I'm going to listen to audiobooks and I'm going to listen to podcasts, or I'm going to, you know, do all these things, when sometimes I'm doing that during the day. So a lot of time I will take that time to just, you know, kind of turn off the radio and just kind of drive and see, you know, what I'm thinking. Sometimes I'll kind of think out loud too, just to break up that constant noise that's happening all the time. So just have some quiet time where you can be with your own thoughts and not other people's thoughts. And then also another really cool thing to do, and is something that's actually very good for your sleep, which I'm a huge like proponent of sleep. Like we're not getting enough sleep.
And you are in good company.
Yeah. Okay, good. Like I am like, sometimes I'm like, I think I'm a sloth. Like I'm sleeping like a ridiculous amount of time. But I think, you know, before you go to sleep, you know, there's like a study, or the few studies that's like, don't have any electronics on like an hour before you go to sleep. Now, that's not always realistic, because like I'm like on my computer doing every last little bit of thing that I can do before I go to sleep. But I just try to take some time just to kind of sit there and like reflect on my day and that kind of thing before I actually fall asleep. And I also drink tea right before I fall asleep, because it helps me to just kind of like tells my body, hey, you're, you know, calming down, that sort of thing.
Those are both really awesome suggestions. So thank you for bringing sleep up. I know Ashley and I have both said in previous episodes that we are fans of sleep.
Yes.
We are not those kind of people who are like, I only sleep 4 hours a night so I can get more done. That's silly, and we don't do that.
Yeah, no. I can do that for like one night, and then the day after that I am so worthless. Miserable. It's like, what was the point?
Exactly. Like I gained 2 hours and lost the next 24 is what it ends up being. So yes. I think we can all agree, and like creatives everywhere can agree, that consuming too much content can really kind of put us at a disadvantage as far as creating our own. So it's important to, you know, limit the television or limit the books or, you know, whatever it may be for you, whether it's blogs or Twitter or social media. But it's a lot harder to say no to people, I find. And I know, if I remember correctly, Jenny, you are living at home and commuting, like you said. So how do you balance that, you know, working on your creative projects with still spending time with family and friends and all of that?
That is an excellent question. You know, I'm very lucky that I have I don't really come from a blogging family. I say that, but my sister is a paleo blogger. So my parents have more of an understanding of how this whole, you know, world works. Whereas I know a lot of people that's not the case for. Like, I mean, I can be like, my parents joke all the time. They're like, my mom was like, yeah, I mean, I got a text from your sister today that she's going to be, you know, she's like, you know, doing this whole 12 days of giveaways for cookbooks on her Instagram. And you're hosting a workshop tonight. And what is my life? Like, what is happening? And I'm like, I'm sure your friends like don't have this same kind of situation. And she's like, no, absolutely not. So my family is very, you know, in touch with this kind of world. But there, you know, I am that social butterfly. Like, I really, I mean, I'm never sure if I'm an introvert or an extrovert. I'm either a very extroverted introvert or I am an extrovert with introverted tendencies. I'm not sure. I feel like I'd need to like sit down with someone and be like, okay, tell me.
I think they call it an ambivert.
Yeah, I've heard that term before.
Ambidextrous. You use both hands. So you're ambivert. You're like equal parts, one or the other.
I have never heard of that before, but that sounds right up my alley, because those Myers-Briggs tests, like everything else, like I'm pretty aligned with everything else, but the extroverted introverted thing, I'm never sure where I fall. So that would make sense that I'm kind of somewhere in between.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm definitely a social person. Like I have a very big extended family too. So there's always some kind of family gathering and always something going on. So it's kind of that, you know, for me, it comes down to, okay, is this something that I need to do right now at this moment? Like, if I don't get this done right this moment, is the world going to end? And most of the time it's like, no, I don't need to do this right now. I can go hang out with my family for a little bit. Like, that's okay. But it's also knowing that I'd like to put in at least an hour of work/writing time every night, at least. But a lot of the times we'll just kind of just be, you know, I mean, on weeknights, it's pretty easy. It's more of the weekdays that come into play where I'll try to keep a balance of, okay, if, you know, I have events going on during the week, during the weekend, I'll make sure to have a little bit of time where I can get in the coffee shop and just be like, okay, I'm going to work really hard for a little bit of time. So it's just, I don't want to say it's about finding a balance, but it kind of is. But saying balance, I feel like it's just very cliche. And it's one of those words that it's like, okay, but what does that mean? I think it's more about finding what's right for you and what your schedule is, and also when you work best. Like if you're a person that can't get up earlier in the morning, like me, then you're not going to do well being like, I'm going to wake up, you know, 20 minutes early every day and I'm going to write. And then every single day you're snoozing on the alarm. It's, you know, finding a time that works best for you. Like, so for me, I know I'm better at staying up a little bit later than I am getting up earlier. So it's just things like that. But, and also just kind of being honest and having conversations with the people in your life and saying, hey, look, this is important to me. And maybe you don't fully understand what it is, but I need time to work and to write and all of that.
Yeah, I really like that you have such a give and take approach with that, where, you know, like if you have a busy weekend here, you might make up for the time elsewhere, or you'll still try to find like a little bit of time to put in some focused creative work. And then I like that you mentioned having those honest conversations with people, because I know that I personally am like, I don't really want to talk to people about what I'm writing. Like, I'm shy about it. I don't want to have to share anything. I don't want to have to answer any questions. And as soon as you tell people like, oh, I'm working on this thing, I can't, then everybody wants to know about it. And sometimes it's just really hard to be honest and upfront about like, no, I'm working on something right now. I'm sorry, I can't hang out with you. So I think that's a really, really good place that you're in, that you're able to do that. And I also think that maybe being an ambivert like you are is like a really good place to be as a writer, because I am very, very introverted and I have to force myself to hang out with people, or more often my husband has to force me to hang out with our friends. And like more often than not, he'll be like, hey, can we hang out with so-and-so? And I'm like, oh, we just saw people like 5 days ago. Like, that was a lot. But like being by other people gives you new ideas and new perspectives. And so I think that's just having that give and take like you do, where you sort of make time for both, even if it's not perfectly balanced, but it's a system that works for you, is really important.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think that's so cool that you have someone in your life that is an extrovert, even if you are introverted. I think that's so good to have someone that can kind of not, I don't want to say like pull that out of you, but like encourage that side of you. Because mm-hmm. I mean, even though you're introverted, look, you've started this podcast and like, that's amazing. This is an amazing way to get to talk to people and, you know, kind of encourage that side of you. And I think it is really important to have that social aspect, because I know I contend, like for me, I have a tendency to be like, oh, well, I have to organize a workshop and I have to write 10 pages and I have to do all these things, that I can get so caught up in this own like kind of virtual world that I've sort of created for myself, that I realize, okay, but I'm not getting any fresh ideas because I'm not having this one-on-one person time with people, person time. And like I come from, like my dad is a very, very extroverted person, and he's encouraged, like from, you know, when I was younger, like I've always wanted to be a writer, and my parents have always known that. Like when I was younger, my mom used to go on these long bike rides, or she used to go run and I would bike next to her, and it would just be an hour long. And I would sit there just telling her stories all the time. And she'd be like, okay, so what happens next? And so they've always encouraged that. And then my dad, like in high school, he used to bring me to meet interesting people around New Orleans to have conversations and get to know people's stories. And since that's happened, it just encourages me more to be curious about people. And I think that is such a good quality to have as a writer, is to just have this curiosity about someone. But we can kind of forget that because we get caught up in the actual writing part of it.
Yeah, that is a really important point of having to go get new material from somewhere. I mean, you can't just generate everything that you ever create from inside of yourself. There's no, I guess there's just no engagement there. There's nothing that people can relate to if it's all coming just from yourself and there's no kind of external relationship.
Absolutely. And everyone has a unique experience and relationship with the world. And, you know, I would be doing a disservice to people that are reading my book and to the art itself if I were, you know, cocky enough to think that I could create everything on my own and not have this this kind of dialogue with other people that have had way different life experiences than me, that would be great to actually tell their story or incorporate that somehow into my writing. Because I mean, I'm only, you know, I'm almost 25. I'll be 25 this month, and I've only had my life experiences, but it's really good and important to have conversations with other people and know what their journey has been like.
Yeah. So speaking of life experiences and sort of like gathering from other people, like what their life's experiences have been like as well, to add to your own context there. I want to talk specifically about your novel for a minute, These Are the Moments. And I think something that a lot of fiction authors run into, particularly younger fiction authors, because maybe we haven't had as broad of experiences quite yet. One thing that a lot of people run into is writing protagonists that are very similar to ourselves if we are involved in fiction work. And so obviously you are not Wendy, who's the main character from These Are the Moments, but you do share a lot of things in common. So how has that sort of related to what you were saying with like taking from your own experiences, but also learning from other people's? Or like, did you run into any troubles or difficulties while you were writing a protagonist that was similar to you, but not exactly you?
Absolutely. And that is definitely a kind of an obstacle to tackle. And especially if you're writing a first person novel, or I mean, mine's not first person, but it kind of started out that way. But if you're writing this very, you know, it's third person limited, my novel is, and it's also, it's contemporary. So we have this tendency to kind of lean into our personal experiences. And like my novel is very personal. There's definitely a lot of personal experiences in the novel, but I tried to kind of, you know, I really, when I was writing it, I was thinking a lot about, you know, at the time I had just, it had been a year after I graduated college, and all of my best friends from college had kind of moved away. So this was sort of a way to connect with them, because I thought a lot about experiences that they had shared with me and things that I knew about them. And so it almost became kind of a love letter in ways to the people in my life. So I tried to incorporate, you know, not just into Wendy, but to Reese and to Vivi, and just characteristics of my friends and experiences that they'd gone through. And Wendy is kind of, she's very interesting because she's a lot like me, but she's also a lot more lost than I was. I wanted to kind of take a version of myself and make her a little bit more dramatized and a little more, I wanted her to start off at a really kind of confused place, in a place where she was just kind of a mess. Like, so it's taking something from life, but then you're twisting it to be a little bit more extreme and a little bit different. And one of the best things that helped for me was I had started it as first person, but the more I was doing that, the more my own voice was kind of coming through. I was like, this is just not going to work. Like, first of all, it sounds really sappy and like just not readable. And second of all, I don't want it to be me. It needs to be someone different. So I kind of took that and then I changed it into third person. And that kind of gave me a little bit of distance to look around and see not only, you know, her perspective, but, you know, the world's perspective of her and her friends. And it just gave me a lot more flexibility to kind of make it a little bit less about just what was inside of her head.
Yeah, that's a really great point. I think that in order to write something, you have to know it at least on some level. Everyone always says, you know, write what you know, which has become this big cliche. But you do have to understand something like on an emotional level before you can really write it down. But I like what you say about, you know, writing that down, writing that experience down, and then kind of exaggerating it for fiction's sake. And I don't think we necessarily want to read like the boring everyday stories that maybe we think we are living, but we definitely want to read versions of them. That's an important point to make.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think too, you know, one of the biggest lessons I learned from writing was, you know, our first drafts are just going to be really awful. Like they're going to be bad. And like, you know, for me, because it is contemporary. So it's kind of like you have that tendency, and like, you know, I set her life in a town that's, you know, that's named the same town that I live in. And so there's just so much of it that I'm like, oh, I can talk about this and I can talk about this. And I kind of needed to get those really bad drafts out where it was just so like kind of self-serving and so just, you know, I don't like just very, very cliche stuff. Like, you know, the dialogue was bad. The setting was just like, you know, all of it was just like, basically like, oh, this just sounds so good. What if this happened? And then I read it. I'm like, this is just, no one wants to read this. And then, so then I, you know, after I kind of got that out of my system, I was like, okay, now I can actually write something that people are going to want to read. So I think we can tend to get stuck in that point where we're like, we can't push past that, but it's kind of like, what did they say about like the pancake, like when, you know, when eats the first pancake or something, there's, mm-hmm, that's some, yeah, kind of, yeah, it's like that. It's like, okay, this was a really bad pancake and now I can actually, you know, start making edible ones.
Yeah, I think Shannon Hale, an author who I love following on Twitter, said that she has to remind herself that her first draft is just shoveling sand into a sandbox so that she can build castles later.
That's amazing.
I love that.
That is such a fantastic image. I've never heard that one before, but it's really true where it's like, if you don't at least get something down on the page or like with whatever your creative endeavor is, like if you don't at least start something, you're never going to be able to work to improve it. So may as well just get the crappy first draft out there.
Exactly. And kind of, and give yourself permission for it to be bad, and not just permission, but kind of expect that, you know what, it's really going to be kind of crazy. And there's just going to be all kinds of really just, you know, there's going to be plot holes all over the place, and it's just going to be bad writing. And you just have to kind of like laugh at it and just move on. And I think that's probably one of the biggest, I wouldn't call it a writing secret exactly, but you know, for a first time writer, they might not necessarily know that that's the course of it. I think we have this expectation that we're going to be, you know, this amazing, this is going to be the most amazing thing I've ever written right off the bat, when that's just not true.
Yeah. And I think that is where social media comes into play again for a lot of writers, because it's so easy for us to look at other writers and say, oh yeah, like it's just your first draft, it's going to get better, like you'll revise it and it'll be fine. But when we're looking at our own writing, it is so, it seems almost impossible to keep writing when you're looking at this pile of crap in a Word document, you know? And other people on social media can really sort of boost your confidence and encourage you to keep going, I think, which is why it's so important to have that community of writers that you sort of know and can go to with problems and stuff like that, or even to just say like, I'm having a tough day, I need somebody to come along on Twitter and cheer me up with pictures of coffee or something.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. That's what you need to do, and everything will be fine.
Speaking of social media again, so you've done a really great job of building up your author platform, which I know is like a dreaded phrase by a lot of writers, but you have done such a good job of building up this author platform that's like genuinely authentic, and it doesn't seem overly promotional, and you are like using your wisdom and your resources to help other people on your blog. And so I would love for you to tell us a little bit about, or a little bit more, I guess, because you've already talked about Twitter a bit, but about how you got started building that author platform. And if you ever resisted that idea, or if you ever struggle with, oh, I'm spending too much time on my platform and not enough time writing the actual work, which I think is a real struggle for a lot of writers.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely a struggle. And for me, it started, I started my blog in fall of 2013. And it was kind of my sister's prompting, because like I said, she's a paleo blogger. So her first thing was, oh, you need to start a blog. You need to start writing now. So I did that before I even really had a concept of what an author platform was. And then after that, I started looking into it more and seeing more of that. And I was like, oh, I think that's kind of what I'm doing, I guess. I don't know. I think that's what this is. So when she first told me, okay, you need to start a blog, I had no idea what I was going to write about. I was like, well, I know about writing, and I know that's what I want to do, but I'm not sure. I guess that's the best way. And, it wound up being the best thing for me, but I think also there are just so many different other ways and other paths that you can take. Like you don't, like just because you're a writer, you don't have to be blogging about writing. But for me, that worked out great because I could kind of incorporate that with my actual journey of writing and publishing a book. So it kind of became a place where I was writing my novel, and then if I was learning a lesson, I would write that on the blog about, oh, here's something I figured out, here's something new. And then once I decided to self-publish, I could really give, you know, advice as I was actually doing it. And one of the biggest things for me was I never wanted to be teaching people things that I hadn't experienced myself, or that I couldn't back up with, you know, evidence of something I'd done. Like, so I didn't want to, you know, be writing posts about, oh, how to find a literary agent when I wasn't looking for a literary agent. So I just wanted it to feel real, and so that people could trust that what I was saying was something that I was actually learning and putting into practice myself. So as that was going along, I started sharing scenes from my book. So it just all coincided where, you know, people are just kind of on, you know, going on from this for this journey. And now it's now the blog's evolved into more than that, where it's more, you know, lengthy posts and more very specific kind of targeted posts. So I'm kind of, I'm like starting a new sort of side blog on my actual author website so that I can have more freedom to just be like, to write these kind of personal creative posts where I don't have to feel the pressure of, you know, I don't know, like having keywords in it or whatnot, you know, just someplace that's more casual. But I know that some people that come to Blots and Plots now are people that are just looking for writing information. And I want to make sure that they can find that easily where it's not too tangled. So I'm kind of going through that. I don't, not a transition, but sort of a transition right now. But you know, as far as making sure, I know it's definitely a concern of, okay, when do I start building this author platform? I get that question a lot. And for me, it was, you know, right as before I was even writing my novel, really, I was writing my first kind of manuscript at the time. So I think, you know, the sooner the better, like any kind of platform, and it's always going to change and grow. I mean, I'm evidence of that. Like the blog is changing and the internet space is changing. So the quicker you kind of get out there and just make really genuine personal connections, I think that is that's the ticket. Like, you know, instead of focusing on how do I build this big following, focus on how do I meet people that are really inspiring and how do I meet people that I can, you know, have honest conversations about writing with or about books with. You know, I think we're so focused on what are my social media numbers? Like how many people are following me on Instagram that we forget that, you know, it's social media. Like we're supposed to be social and making these connections. So, and I think that's why Blots and Plots has been so successful because I've been able to make these, you know, honest, you know, connections with people and not just readers, but also writers and bloggers and all of these people. So as far as balancing time and finding the time, rather, you know, should I be writing or should I be building an author platform? I say don't try to do too much at one time. Thankfully, I didn't have that tendency at the time. It was kind of like, okay, I have this blog and sometimes I talk to people on Twitter. But now there's so much more out there. You know, there's Instagram, there's like Periscope, there's all of these things that can be really overwhelming and we try to be on all things at one time. So I would say if you have limited time, you know, make sure that you're writing because that's so important and you need to find that time. But you can also balance that by being active on Twitter and have a website. Those are my two main things. Having a website where people can find you and being on Twitter where you can actually have conversations with people and start a writing sprint with someone and that kind of thing.
That's amazing advice for anyone who wants to just kind of get started. And it's so hard to know where to like take that first step. So website, Twitter, and just write, I think are three lovely takeaways. And speaking about community, you this year have made a pledge to only read books by other indie authors. And I know indie authors really rely on their communities to be buying their books and supporting them and spreading the word. So what are some indie books that you have read to share with Mini Book Club this week?
Yes, I love this question. And, you know, it's really been interesting just reading indie books. Like I've been reading, last year there were a lot of people that I'm friends with that publish, you know, independently that at the time, for whatever reason, I was like, I can't read the book right now or I put it off or whatnot. So it's been really great to be able to read people's books that I've been, you know, had on my list or had, you know, actually on my, bookshelf and not actually read. So, three of the books that I'll pick three of them that I really recommend. I would pick, Now and Again by Jennifer, and I'm going to say her last name wrong because I think it's Ellison, but I don't know if that's correct. It's Ellison. And that's Now and Again. And that is actually very, the premise of it, if you look at the premise of it, it's very similar to my novel, These Are the Moments. But when you actually read it, it's a lot different. But the writing is great. And I love the characters. And I read that like in 2 days. It was so good. So Now and Again. And then also I found this this author, Sophia Elaine Hansen, and her book is Vinyl. And it won a self-publishing award. I can't remember exactly which one it was, but I found it through an award kind of list. And Vinyl is this really cool, it's kind of a dystopian or a steampunk. I'm not exactly sure which one. I think it's probably a steampunk novel. And that's going to be a trilogy, and it's amazing and just so different from anything else that I've read that I highly recommend that. I'm really excited for whenever the next novel comes out. And the last one that I would recommend is Secrets Don't Keep by Alora Nicole Ramirez. And she's one of my friends from Twitter. And I read this, and it's kind of like a secret society novel. So it's a little bit, but it's also a little bit like Gossip Girl, which was really cool. And I read that like on an airplane. I was sitting there and I was just like flipping through it so fast because I really wanted to see how it ended. And that's going to be, there's going to be a sequel to that. I'm not sure if it's going to be a trilogy, but there will be a follow-up novel to that. So those are the books that I've really, really loved. And if anybody has any other recommendations as far as indie books, I'm accepting them. You can, you know, tweet them at me or whatnot. I am so excited to read more.
Yeah, I think that's such an awesome goal that you've got for this year, because it's not something that many people think of. Like, I think everybody sort of picks up an indie book here or there. I definitely used to do that more until my toddler broke my Kindle screen. That put a damper on it, since so many indie books are published as ebooks. That sort of put a little halt to that. But
yeah.
But I think, you know, so many people just don't know where to get started there, or they're not sure, like, okay, is this one really going to be that good? Mm-hmm. Or like, how do I know that it's well edited? And so I just think it's really awesome that you've made it a goal to like go out and find the good ones. And I'm sure you're going to be like compiling a list of those at some point to share on your blog of, and maybe I'm being presumptuous, maybe you're not planning on doing that, but.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I've been doing it kind of monthly. I've been trying to like keep up with them, and just kind of I've made like those like big Pinterest posts of the books that I've read. And mm-hmm. I was doing videos, but that's been a little bit time consuming lately. So I've been kind of sticking just to blog posts. But I also plan to write a post just about where to find indie books, because that's been a big question I've gotten too. Is okay, but how do you know they're an indie book? And like, I want to support indie writers, but I'm not sure how to find their books and where's the best place to go. So I plan on writing a post just about that, so people can have a better idea of how to find them. And, you know, because I know a lot of people want to support authors of all kinds, but it's really cool to find a book that's, you know, not as well known and that needs a little bit extra support. So I really, you know, that's been a great thing for me to kind of find these books.
Yeah, that would be amazing and super helpful. And I can't wait till you write that post. You know, no pressure. what about you, Ashley? Have you read any indie books lately or before Hadley broke your Kindle?
Well, she broke my Kindle almost a year ago, so it has been a long time, because I bought a new one and that immediately also broke for reasons unrelated to her this time. Oh, so okay. Yeah, so I'm like, I'm sort of just like, well, there went my e-reading days. I'll probably get a new one this summer, but I haven't yet. So I think the last indie book that I read, and I can't remember the name of it now, it was by Ed, I always want to pronounce his name Szyszewski, but I know that that is not how you pronounce it. But he's a nonfiction author, and he writes a lot about like the craft of writing and finding time to write. And so I have read two of his books, and I think one of them was the most recent one I read before my Kindle bit the dust. But I can't remember the name of it. It was so long ago. So this is not a very, I was halfway through it when it broke, and it was good at that point. So this is not the best recommendation.
Well, we'll have to have you like look that up and at least put it in the show notes. So if people want to check it out, you can give them like a halfway recommendation. Is that?
Yeah. So yeah. I'll find those and look them up and put them in the show notes. Because I do remember that both of his books that I read were good and were worth reading if you are an author who's interested in sort of honing a craft of writing or finding more time to write. I know that was something that he focused on a lot as well. So probably worth mentioning in the show notes. Yeah, how about you? Have you read any indie books?
Yeah, last year I read a couple of them. Indie books for me have been hit or miss. I kind of, several years ago, kind of jumped on the, oh, it's free on Amazon, and would download it and read it. And some of them were somewhat disappointing. I think more from an editing standpoint than maybe an actual like concept or execution standpoint. But last year I stumbled upon a couple of them that I really, really loved and was 100% behind recommending. So one of them is The Charismatics by Ashley Carlson.
Yes.
And
I love
her. Yeah, it's like steampunk dystopian fantasy. But it was amazing. And I believe it's the first of a series. She's working on the second one, if I recall correctly. So I'm eager for the second one to come out. And it just, it was really good. If you like kind of the wave of dystopian novels that have come out, and it's not quite young adult, but it's not quite, I guess, old adult. I don't know how I would describe that.
I wish old adult was a real section in the bookstore.
We're making up genres now, guys.
That would be a great genre. I would like to write an old adult book.
There you go. I like it. These are the geriatric novels. So that Perfect. One was really good. And another one that I found was The Color of Water in July by Nora Carroll. And it was a book that I downloaded and I read, and I just really, the story just stuck with me. And I've actually read it again since then. It was like so powerful and I wanted to go back and revisit it. And one of my critiques was that it was just slightly under edited. I wanted it to be just a little more fleshed out in places and a little skimmer in others. And since then, I know she has picked up a publishing deal for that book and a publisher re-released it. And so I'm interested to get my hands on a second copy and read like the edited version and see what changed.
That's awesome. I've just added that to like my Goodreads list so that I can check that out. That's so cool.
Yeah, I always sit on Goodreads while during the mini book club and I'm like, add.
Yeah, that list just gets longer and longer and longer. So.
It does. That does sound like really good picks, though, because I think I've only read nonfiction indie books. I don't know if I've read, I'm trying to think if I've read a fiction one, and there's not one I can think of, but it sounds like the things that you guys have both talked about tonight would be really good places to start.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot out there, and it's just, I really do think it's a matter of finding it. And for me too, I like to check and see in the copyright if they've had an editor, which, you know, that way I can kind of have an idea of going into it, whether or not it was professionally edited. And it really does make all the difference. And for anybody that is thinking about publishing independently, I highly recommend getting an editor. It's just, you know, it makes all the difference, and it gives your book that much more of a chance of actually finding readers that, you know, appreciate it and love it.
Absolutely.
Yes. I second that, and not just because I'm an editor. So.
There you go.
That is perfect. Well, thank you so much for sharing all of your picks with us, Jenny, and thank you for coming on the podcast tonight. Before you go, can you tell all of our listeners where to find you, your website or social media handles?
Yes, absolutely. So I'm Blots and Plots. I think everywhere. I'm on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. I'm mostly on Twitter and Instagram. I'm on Facebook sometimes. But my website is blotsandplots.com. And also, if I have a free novella on my website, jennybravobooks.com. So you can go and sign up and download a free novella.
And that is always a good deal. Who doesn't love something free to read?
Exactly. It's a win-win.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for coming on and chatting with us today. I feel like we had some really good conversations here.
We really did. Thank you so much for having me, Ashley and Abby. This was so much fun. I really, really enjoyed talking with you one-on-one.
Thanks for listening to the Chasing Creative podcast. If you like what you heard in this episode, be sure to stop by chasingcreative.com to check out the show notes, catch up on past episodes, and subscribe to the podcast.
If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love it if you'd leave us a review on iTunes. You can also join in the creative conversation by tweeting to us at Abigail E. Krebs or at Brooks Editorial, or by using the hashtag ChasingCreative on Twitter and Instagram.
If there's a guest you'd love to hear from on the podcast, or if you have any feedback for us, drop us a line at chasingcreativepodcast@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening. Until next week, go chase your creative.